This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Nick Tolhurst and Jeff Wood with you through until 12. There's been an incident in the election today, and we're about to interview someone from one of the political parties, and we need to be very careful because there's a blackout. We can't talk about political material or do any sort of party promotion, but this is an incident that's occurred that we think's a news item of interest to people. So let's hear what's actually happening.
We've got Robbie Swan from Australian Sex Party on the line. He's the public officer of the party. Hi, Robbie. How are you?
Hi, mate. How are you going, Nick?
Very good. Now, being very mindful of our role here, we don't want to be thrown off air.
Sure.
Something happened to a candidate for an election today which has caused a bit of concern.
Well, it certainly has. I think, Fiona Patten, who's, of course, the candidate for the Australian Sex Party in the seat of Higgins in the by-election today, was driving in her Sex Party car with Sex Party signage on it, as all the parties have. You know, they've got the Liberal posters and all on their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And she was detained at South Yarra Station by the Victorian Police after receiving complaints. And they held her there for 15 minutes while they checked this out. And, the signs simply, they didn't have any images or anything on them. They simply said what, all the signs say, just the name
they
of the
just
party.
Public announcements.
So there's nothing pornographic or there's nothing where she could be charged with any other sort of offences.
Said the Australian Sex Party and that vote won and that was it.
Whatever. So that material would be like any political party who's out there canvassing today, whether Labor's not canvassing, but Green. So does that have to be approved anyway by somebody or other before it goes?
Not really. On the signs, you have to have an authorisation, which we had.
That's from the party itself.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's got to have the person who's authorised it and the place that they are, their registered office address. And we complied totally with all that, so it was totally authorised. I mean, that's not a police matter anyway, but it's an electoral commission matter. It's not a criminal offence to not have an authorisation. But the authorisations were on there, so there was absolutely no reason to do that, except that, the complaints from the public, and we just would have thought that the police would have, they were polite and they were nice, so they weren't rude or anything, but
it was something to do with complaints from people. Does the Electoral Commission have to approve how to vote cards and any advertising material that goes out from a party?
No, they don't. In fact, we sent a card to the returning officer, and then he said he didn't want to know about it. He said, if you want to get some advice, you've got to take legal advice on that. Really, unless you've put something obscene or inciting people to terrorism or something, there would be no problem with any of that. Some people might find, like, the One Nation thing offensive or something. I don't know. I mean,
but they still the right to put it up as a strategy and as a political statement. I guess.
Yeah, of course.
I guess if you're on an opposing side politically, you're going to find a vote won for any party offensive in that sense. If that's all that happened, and we don't want to make any allegations here, but it does seem strange that, the police would pull someone over just because they had electoral material on their car.
I think it's a bit strange as well. I mean, whoever gave the order to the local constables to go out there and do that, I think that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sort of point the finger at anyone, but clearly an ordinary sign that really could in no way be thought to be obscene or anything, that for a registered political party that simply has the registered political party's name and vote one.
Well, you or I as ordinary citizens wouldn't have the power to ask the police to pull anybody over, so do you think anything more will come out of this, or are you just going to let it rest or what?
No, I think, I think that someone needs to ask the question, who made the complaint? And why was it activated? I mean, why was the candidate stopped from going to a polling booth? 15 or 20 minutes it's not a lot of time, I suppose, generally. But, I mean, if you're, there could have been, 200 people voted in that time at the at the polling booth she was headed for, where she wanted to distribute her literature, and she wanted to, talk to people, as they all do. I mean, Kelly O'Dwyer was there, and the Clive Hamilton was there, and she was headed to the booth, I think, that Kelly O'Dwyer was at. And, you know, I just think it's a bit rich that, you know, people could, you know, law-abiding citizens, you know, running for election can be pulled over by the police for something that's really spurious. I mean, it's just a nonsense that that happened.
Robbie, can I ask you to take off your party hat, if that's possible at the moment, and just give a comment as to the kind of campaign that's been run in Higgins? Has it been a clean campaign? Has it... Have there been sort of, has there been mudslinging and so forth? Is there any reason to believe that this, these sort of complaints could have come out of some underbelly of tension that was going on in the campaigns?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, really. And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, we were boycotted by some areas in the media, but that happens, you know. I mean, we got a good run on Joy, so... You know, that happens too. So I'm not worried about that. But I was actually quite concerned that the night before that, you know, that party members who had been distributing how-to-vote cards in a local hotel in Armidale had been, you know, told to leave by the publican just because they were from the sex party. And she said, you know, she was happy to have other parties in there, but just not us. And I thought, that's a form of discrimination, really.
It is. I think we've got to be careful about moving any further in that direction, but I take your point here. Look, Robbie, thanks very much. And we'll find out more after this. After it's all the hustle and bustle of today has died down. And thanks for talking with us this morning on Joy.
Thanks, Nick. That's great.
Cheers.
Thanks, Robbie. Bye-bye. It raises interesting questions, Nick, doesn't it, about, you know, the sensitivity of this, even if, you know, the police have the right to pull anyone over and, you know, people have the right to advertise their campaigns, but it just gets a little bit on edge when you
it
get
is,
police
I've
kind
not
of
heard
taking action
done before.
With people.
It's, no. I just think, you know...
And even if there is a complaint, like, what do you... So? If you've got a bumper sticker on your car that says,
I don't
you
like
know,
it.
I like sex with men or something like that, is that... offensive, and what action can police take?
Yeah, I mean, if I saw offensive, I've seen plenty of offensive bumper stickers, but I doubt if I rang the police and said, look, that offends me, pull that person over and find out what they've got on board, not going to happen.
Look, I think quite honestly, the thing that most people in Higgins will find offensive is any political advertising from opponent parties. So that's the kind of
yes, well,
it
is an election day, so.
But still, it does raise an issue about whether, you know, the sexuality issue is there and whether that's... something that, but, you know, I guess if people are making complaints and getting police action through political motives, that's kind of dirty politics, really.
It's not the country we're used to, anyway. So,
indeed,
well.
We're not. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9, Freddie Mercury, Love Kills, it's 20 past...
Ban.
What did I do?
You've broken that ban of playing that song after Freddie Mercury's death. It's very tacky of you.
Oh, well...
Sorry, I have to upbraid you about some song
that
you play.
We all die, Nick. There's nothing outrageous about dying.
Please don't die on air, that's all.
I won't. Okay. I'm planning not to.
Gorgeous. All right, is that a segue?
You can
I messed up the last one.
No, it's not a segue. We're going to do this first.
Oh.
Joy 94.9, Gold Star Radio.
And a very big thank you to all Joy's volunteers. It's great volunteering here at Joy, and... it's a lot of work, and we've got 250 volunteers who do lots of wonderful work here. So, a big live congratulations.
Well, it is. Do you know, it is International Volunteers Day today.
Yeah.
And more than 5.4 million adults, which is 34% of the population, do voluntary work each year.
Yeah.
How about that? Our country would come to a standstill if we didn't have volunteers, especially working in the community sector, social support and things like that.
Who said altruism was dead?
It's not. Who is he? Is a friend of Freddie's?
Altruism.
Did he have a song?
He's, I don't know. That'd be, that's a good name for someone. Altruism,
yes. Well, he's not dead. He's alive and well in Australia.
He's alive and well. You're listening to Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9.
Good. And speaking of community service and social support, we've got with us this morning Simon Ruth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Step right into that microphone, Simon. Okay. You've got a bit of a... happy this morning.
Got a bit of a cough, yeah.
That's no good. Well, look, we'll keep you on alive and talking. Simon, you're the director of a very long title. It's the Peninsula Health?
I'm the director of complex care services at Peninsula Health, and I oversee a range of community health programs, but I'm here today to talk about Peninsula Drug and Alcohol Program, otherwise known as PENDAP.
PENDAP. Now, there's a very exciting project, which is PENDAP has got, and PENDAP is, I mean, when you're talking about Peninsula, what are we talking about geographically here? Who are we talking about?
The Mornington, well, our catchment is the city of Frankston, which takes in the larger area of Frankston, including Seaford and Carrum, all the way down to Portsea.
Mm-hmm. So it's a big area. Big population?
About 290,000.
Mm-hmm. And obviously we get Joy down there by the sound of it.
I think we reached that far.
That's good. Hello, Mornington Peninsula. I think it's probably... Yeah, it's probably safe to say that from the very urban, Melbourne urban-centric sort of point of view, that Frankston is a very forgotten or much derided sort of town and often doesn't get much of a look in, if you reckon?
I wouldn't say that. I work in Frankston. I think Frankston's lovely. The view as you drive over Oliver's Hill of the city of Melbourne is a spectacular view, and the Mornington Peninsula is full of wineries and beaches and sporting clubs and bed and breakfasts. And
so maybe Mornington Peninsula just doesn't think it really needs Melbourne to worry about it too much, and that's probably a healthy sort of thing. Now, you're doing a project here which is pretty much, I was about to say targeted at young people, but I think that's one of the interesting things for me is it's not only about young people and drug use. But before we go, there is the Mornington Peninsula a particularly sort of either a youth-oriented sort of environment or a big partying sort of town or something?
We're talking about a number of towns, so we're covering Frankston, Hastings, Mornington, Portsea, Rosebud.
They're all quite different.
They're all very, very different towns, and there are a lot of young people down there. There's not a lot of transport, so it can be difficult for young people to get around. But there are, particularly over summer, there's a lot of people who flock to the peninsula. So the peninsula swells by over a million across the summer period. And there's a lot of nightclubs and bars, and particularly around Portsea and Sorrento and Mornington and Frankston. You get a lot of young people and a lot of activity.
And where there are a lot of young people, a lot of activity in bars, there's drugs most definitely.
Yes, drugs.
And that's where PENDAP comes in, which is, tell us again. What's it, PENDAP acronym is?
It's Peninsula Drug and Alcohol Program.
Okay. Now, that sounds like a pretty dry and difficult sort of work. What's your main brief?
We're an outpatient drug treatment service, so we provide... Drug treatment tends to be broken up into residential withdrawal and rehab and then outpatient programs, and so we provide the range of outpatient programs, which includes counselling, youth outreach, Indigenous outreach, adult outreach programs, home-based withdrawal, and we also run needle exchanges. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a specific gay, lesbian, or you know, queer community sort of outreach program? Or
no, we don't.
Mm-hmm. So how did PENDAP get Howard drug money? I just love saying Howard drug money, and we'll explain that probably because there may be some people who think that's just not possible. But how did you get Howard drug money to make a DVD about gay and lesbian people and methamphetamines and stuff?
We didn't tell them we were going to start
with. Good start, okay. Lesson one and how to deal with government funders.
So was it broad funding for just the program or was it funding for a DVD or media project?
It was broad. It's part of the National Illicit Drug Strategy and it's broad money to tackle the amphetamine crisis that Prime Minister Howard identified. And our project, it had a number of facets. If you're on the peninsula last summer and you went into a toilet in a bar or in a public place, you would have seen a poster on the back of the toilet door about amphetamines and trying to identify the harms and referring you back into us. And so we've had a number of facets, but one was we were going to produce a DVD about amphetamine use and mental health. And then we discovered that one of our sister services here in Melbourne was also producing a very similar DVD. Across Victoria, there were about 20 projects funded. And none
Which
of them,
is pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, none of them were tackling the gay and lesbian community. Okay. And when we realised someone else was making a very similar DVD to us, we thought, well, here's a gap, here's an obvious gap. That it wasn't tackled within the gay and lesbian community. Nobody was looking at that, and it was something that we could offer.
So the other DVD, the other service, wasn't doing it with a specific gay and lesbian focus?
No, it's a general approach, and that's Moreland Hall, and I think they're releasing their DVD in February or March.
Who do some fantastic work.
With drug work.
So why, you know, what's the issues with gay and lesbian drug use? Is it particularly rife down there, or, you know, what's the things you're picking up?
It's not necessarily rife on the peninsula, but across Melbourne, I think the gay and lesbian community has a very different attitude towards drugs. It's more accepting of drug use within its party scene and within its general scene, and so it carries with it a whole range of different issues from the normal community. The general community, if they're aware of a friend or a family member using illicit drugs, might react much more severely than the gay and lesbian.
How would that
community
be different, do you think? I mean, I know we're generalising here, but there's probably some evidence behind it all. And plus your own experience. Yeah.
It's just a different attitude. I mean, the gay and lesbian community is much more accepting of drug use, and they're probably going to react later to drugs. They're not going to react as hysterically as the general community may, but they will react later. And And I think in talking to our partners, and we've got a number of partners on this DVD, we were looking at talking to them about what are the issues specifically in the gay and lesbian community. And one of the things that was raised was that when people start to slip and their drug use starts to get out of control, the gay and lesbian community isn't always necessarily very good at talking about that, and often people slip away and you don't notice them slipping away.
Slipping away, that's a euphemism for...
getting lost in their drug use and cutting themselves off from their friends and losing their support networks.
So is the focus of the DVD or the general program within the GLBTI community about like the harms of drug use itself, or is there also a focus, say, on HIV infection from people having unsafe sex when they've been using drugs? And like, does it tackle both those kind of harms?
Yes, it does. Mm. It's the DVD is about amphetamine use and ice use and meth use and ecstasy use, but the principles are probably generic. Mm. They're generic across all drug types, but HIV is something that came up. We ran focus groups for this DVD, and we talked to gay men and lesbians about what issues they felt needed to be covered, and one of the things that was identified was risk of HIV when you're intoxicated or when you're high.
Mm. Mm. Because we're talking I actually watched the video yesterday, and it's really good. I shouldn't say I was pleasantly surprised, but I was very surprised at I wasn't surprised. It's really good quality, and I kind of expected that great production quality.
You weren't surprised?
No, I was good, because I looking at all the partners involved there, it's no surprise. You know, we've got GLHV and Access Point and some great people there. The roles, you had actors playing roles, and this the video is about scenarios and real people, and they do come across as very, very real. I was intrigued that the gay man or the gay couple, that's the principal focus for the HIV story in some ways. We're talking about a man who's...
Kurt and Dean.
Kurt, yeah. He's an older man. I mean, kind of what age would you say?
Kurt's probably late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah, he's not a young party boy.
No.
And yet he's getting into... amphetamine use, is it? What's his story there? A lot of pills.
One of the things that came up in the focus groups and our expert committee was that in the gay community, people start to use drugs young, and you often get people who develop drug problems then. And then there's a lot of people who use drugs throughout their life and they cope okay, and then something occurs and their drug use starts to escalate. They turn to it for a coping mechanism. And then when that happens, they often cut themselves off from their peers, and all of their friends may not be in that same place anymore, and so they then start to get lost. And so in Kurt's story, he's in his late 30s, early 40s, he's quit his job, he's decided he wants a change of career, and he's using a lot of drugs and having a lot of sex.
Mm.
And his partner's HIV positive, and his partner travels a lot for work, and so Kurt spends a lot of time alone, and he finds comfort in spending time out in venues where he's having a lot of sex.
And I think, interestingly, it's quite blunt descriptions, open descriptions about, and from another one of the actors, Matt, who's in fact not so much an actor, but a person who's been there and done that, I gather, about just why people take drugs, why it feels good. And I think that's interesting that the DVD is not saying this is a terrible thing. This is not a Reefer Madness sort of DVD which says, you know, if you, this is all evil and this is what's going to happen, you'll end up in hell. It's actually quite honest. It says that, you know, people take drugs because they get a good experience out of them, but they do lose control. But the message isn't about don't take drugs. It actually is about harm minimization, about managing. It's not, certainly not advocating the use of drugs. So I was interested with Kurt. I mean, it got to the point where he, in fact, did have unsafe sex and went and saw a doctor about it. And again, another illuminating, for me, episode on
post-exposure prophylaxis.
And stuff. So it's a very revealing sort of story. And I was most interested that it was an older man.
Mm. One of the things we wanted to explore with it was, a lot of people use drugs and people regulate their drug use, and they might use a lot when they're younger, and then things happen in their life. It may be losing your job or getting told off or having a relationship breakup, and then people moderate their drug use and they never really have a major problem with it. Mm. Other people have those same problems but don't make the same decisions, and their decisions, they continue using drugs and it gets out of control. And so we wanted to explore those points. So there's three key stories, and in each story there is a point where something happens, and it's about those decisions that are made.
Yeah, especially amongst the two young lesbian girls.
Yeah.
And a sudden rapid change there.
You're listening to Joy 94.9 Saturday Magazine. Our guest is Simon Ruth, who's the Director of Complex Care Services with Peninsula Health. Simon, is the thrust of the program and the DVD about deterring people from starting the use of drugs, or is it like this guy that you've just been talking about? I haven't seen the DVD, so I don't know the story. But the older guy that you were talking about, obviously, or the presumption is that he's been using drugs for quite a long time, that he started as a young man and it's become much more habitual for him. Is the target of the program to stop people using, or is it targeted more towards people who are using to get them to alter the way they use drugs?
No, this DVD is targeted at people who are already using amphetamines.
Right.
It's not targeted at people who have very severe active problems, because they're probably already in touch with services like ours, already talking to their GPs about it, and it's not targeted at people who aren't using drugs. Though, if they watch the DVD, they will get a very honest picture of what drug use is like and the problems it can
occur. So it's that middle ground between the preventative and the people who are already receiving.
It's for people who may not have problems yet, but may be at risk of developing problems.
And I think also, very successfully, it's for people who aren't using drugs, but as you were saying earlier, to look at their friends and to start noticing signs of change. Mm. And so what things typically do you notice in somebody who's say they're escalating their drug use? And we're talking we're not talking heroin and cocaine stuff here, but you say it's a bit transferable. We're talking about party drugs, and I'd like just to go back over what they are. And what would people notice in someone who's shifting or losing control of their use?
We're talking about amphetamines here, and cocaine is very similar to an amphetamine. The sorts of things you'll notice early on might be paranoia, it might be anger, it might be people having difficulty coping with the come down and managing their mood. At the more extreme end, if somebody's been awake for 4 or 5 days on amphetamines, they're probably going to go psychotic. At that point, they'll probably end up in an emergency department somewhere, and the family.
So it's a full-on sort of psychosis. When you say paranoid, you're not talking about people being a bit suspicious of friends. You're talking about the clinical phenomenon of paranoia.
Well, both.
Yeah,
both. So for a very severe episode where somebody's been awake for many, many days, the psychosis and that sort of paranoia will occur. But early on, anybody who's ever come down, had Eki Tuesday or Eki Wednesday, will know that feeling of, what did I do, and are my friends talking about me, and have I embarrassed myself? And so there is a level of paranoia that goes along with that.
And in the more severe cases where psychosis occurs, is it a transitory thing? Because with some cannabis use, some people have psychotic episodes triggered that then stay with them, and they achieve an ongoing diagnosis of a psychotic condition. Is it the same kind of thing, or does it tend to be a transitory thing with the coming down off the drug?
It can be, and I guess we're learning more every day. There's more research coming out all the time about cannabis and amphetamine-induced psychosis. It can, for a lot of amphetamine users, the psychosis is not so much caused by the amphetamines, it's caused by being awake. If you're awake for long enough and you don't get rest and you don't get sleep, you're likely to become psychotic.
Yeah.
And some people, it will trigger a lifelong illness, but that's not very common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll hear from our sponsors, take a bit of a music break, and we'll continue speaking with Simon Ruth, who's the Director of Complex Care Health Services. Complex Health. Complex.
It's a complex
care
title,
services.
Yeah. It's PENDAP.
Just say PENDAP.
PENDAP. Okay, this is Joy 94.9. You're listening to Saturday Magazine.
Joy 94.9, Gold Star Radio.
I'll get Nicole. We're talking with Simon Ruth, who's the director at PENDAP down the Mornington Peninsula. PENDAP's produced a DVD about ICE methamphetamine use in the gay and lesbian community using federal money, Howard drug money. I love saying that. Now, the DVD, it's ridiculous talking on radio about a DVD. We'll talk about how you can get hold of this DVD in a second. One thing I like about it, Simon, is there's some good professional advice in it being offered by
Dr. David Spencer is the GP who's involved in it. So the DVD is a docudrama, and it follows three stories, and then we have expert commentary throughout those talking about the stories and what's going on. And Dr. David Spencer, who's a GP, I think, in Middle Park, is talking about the people who come into his clinic and what he sees and how he treats them. And there's also Michael Inglis, who's a psychologist with Access Point, and Access Point is Victoria's only amphetamine-specific treatment service, and it's run through Turning Point Alcohol and Drug Centre.
We've only got one.
We used to have Access Point used to run two clinics and they didn't get enough people coming in. So there's now only one. And
why don't people go in for treatment? People don't typically self-refer or amphetamine use, I suppose. Is that a stupid question?
I think with Access Point, there were a few issues around who they could accept as clients and what their funding said. So, but amphetamine users do come in for treatment. We don't have a really great range of treatments. It's probably one of the drugs, unlike alcohol and heroin, where we have a lot of options. Mm. Amphetamine use, we don't have the range of pharmacotherapies.
Is it that people are reluctant to seek treatment because there's more social acceptability to something like amphetamine use or party drugs? Like, I think people have a bit of an attitude that if it's a party drug, it's about partying, like in the heavy stuff, you know, the heroin.
Well, there's a lot of myths to dispel about all that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they are myths. But do you think those kind of myths play a role in whether or not people seek treatment? Like, it's often people are reluctant to admit their alcohol abuse because it's socially acceptable and you're seen as weak because you can't take your grog kind of stuff. Do you think that plays any role, or is that just my fantasizing?
Only a small percentage of people who use drugs will require treatment, and only a small percentage of those actually come in for treatment. And I guess heroin and alcohol and things like that are much more dramatic.
Yeah.
Heroin is a very dramatic drug when someone's addicted to it. And alcohol, you're going to lose your license and you're probably going to get into fights. And amphetamines
is
very different.
So prevalent as well.
And so amphetamines are different and they're used in a different way. When you're using them actively for many days, you're going to end up in an emergency department and psychotic, and probably that classic image that we see on TV of somebody getting in a fight with the doctors and security being called.
Yeah. Mm.
But there's a whole range of people before that who are starting to develop minor problems, and we can pick those up. We know how to raise awareness of those, and this DVD is trying to do
that. But as you say, if there's not a lot of services operating, if people aren't aware, then they won't respond. And it's kind of a bit of a vicious circle, isn't it?
When I say there's only one amphetamine-specific treatment service, every drug treatment service in Victoria will deal with people with amphetamine issues, and all GPs would hopefully also be able to
help
people with amphetamine issues.
I was impressed with the way the GP in the DVD was talking to the guy about HIV risk and T-cell counts and things like that. So there's quite a lot of sort of myths that this DVD bursts.
One of the myths, we ran focus groups for this, and one of the myths that came out early on was that amphetamines have a positive effect on your T-cell count.
Which means they're good for them.
And we checked that out. I was surprised by that when I heard that, and we checked it out with our medical advisors, and we were told, no, they actually do not have a positive effect at all on HIV, particularly if you're binge using and you're awake for 3 and 4 days, just the exhaustion that causes can have a negative effect.
Yeah, it's kind of maybe it's a fine point, but it probably it relates to any sort of drug use, including alcohol. One issue is the effect of the drug and what it does to you personally and immediately, and why you take it. And no one takes drugs pretty much because they hate them. But there's an issue about how you use the drug, and if you use it excessively or if you abuse it, it actually changes the way you live your life. You don't eat as well. You don't sleep as well. Mm. You put yourself into risky, disinhibited behavior, or you're less in control. So it's the way the drug actually affects your life which actually carries a lot of the risk, not just the drug in and of itself.
Yeah, I guess all drugs are dangerous at the end of the day, and you need to be aware of the dangers and the impact that those drugs are having on you. And for HIV-positive people, drugs are more dangerous because the negative effects of the drug use can be much more dramatic for HIV-positive people. And so people who are HIV-positive need to be much more careful when they're using drugs, not to go out for 4 days at a time and to take better care of themselves.
It's when, unfortunately, we get a bit older too, our capacity to manage drugs is not as good, is it?
No, it certainly goes down, and that's our service is establishing an older adult treatment service, and certainly as you get older, your ability to process drugs.
This will come as a bit of a shock to some.
Yes, it will. Yeah. So your liver function goes down, and your kidney function goes down, and your body changes. And so an older person, a 60, 65-year-old, should not be drinking what they were drinking at 40 because they cannot process it, and the impact on their health will be much greater.
Are 60-year-olds taking party drugs?
Last time I went to a dance party, I think I saw 60-year-olds taking party drugs.
I think they.
Probably not.
I mean,
it would be less common,
I guess, but.
But it could be on the increase. Well, because our age group, my darling Jeff, is getting there.
Not too far away.
Party animal you are, Mister.
But I hear people in there who are turning 40 say, "Look, I can't handle things the way I used to in terms of alcohol and other drugs." So it's like, it's not surprising in a way. I've lost the question. I had a question in my head. See, that's about getting older.
We lose questions. That's what all that those years of abusing your body have brought you and your mind and stuff. And I guess that's the thing. I mean, I suppose what I'm trying to say is amphetamines, as a drug, it has a specific effect on your body. It does things to your body. It makes chemical changes. And I'm not saying it's a bad, they're a good thing, but it is just yet another chemical. It's the way we use it. It's the way it interacts with our lifestyle and the impacts it has, which often tells an awful lot about the issues that arise when we talk about drug abuse. Mm. So a single one-off use is not going to kill you necessarily. If it doesn't kill you, you survive and you never do it again. There's probably not an abuse or a harm situation there. It's the pattern of use which really matters.
It's a pattern of use that matters. I wouldn't say that's the case for all drugs. A single one-off use of heroin could kill you. But amphetamines, it's probably not likely to kill you. It is a stimulant drug. It makes you feel strong and powerful and euphoric and confident, and that's why a lot of people like this drug.
I like to go back to
and
it.
I guess, yes. You know, for some people, behaviourally, it could kill them if they start doing crazy things. But also with individual differences and so forth on... you know, that people do respond differently to first-time drug use, don't they? That some people tolerate it much better than others, and some, like the whole thing with the psychosis and cannabis, some people will never develop any psychotic symptoms from cannabis use. Others develop it very readily because of, you know, genetic predisposition.
So we need to understand the risks. And I guess this is what we don't do, and what the DVD, I think, spells out really clearly, that there are risks associated. This is what they are. This is how you can get treatment for them, but it's very clear about what they are and what you need to know if you're either using or considering using it.
There's one story in the DVD, and it's the young lesbian couple, and there's the partner who copes very well with their drug use and gets along with their life, and then there's the girlfriend who uses for the first time and can't control her use. She loves it, and she starts losing control, and she can't find a way out of it. It becomes something very integral to her.
Yeah, it's I was about to say it's a bit ironic. I'm not sure if it is, but the partner who has control of it is, you know, quite scathing about her, the other girl's sort of inability to manage and stuff. However, I think they're quite supportive at the end.
So, just about the DVD itself, it's targeted to that group of people between, like, preventing the commencement of drug use and those who are already receiving treatment. How do you get people to look at something like this? Like, the DVD is about raising awareness, but if there's not some awareness raised, will they look at the awareness raising DVD in the first place? What's the kind of program that you have of that?
I think we got a script writer in, and all the stories in it are real stories. They came out of our focus groups, and they came out of our expert advisory committee, and I think it's just a really good story. Even if you're not looking at this as a health DVD, you will enjoy the stories that are occurring, and there's some great acting.
And it's professionally acted. So
yeah, it's well acted, actually.
Yeah.
So tell us about the launch, Simon.
The launch is on December 16th, which is a Wednesday, and it's from 9 to 11 in the morning at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image.
ACME.
Mm-hmm. ACME in Federation Square. And we've got breakfast from 9 to 9.30, and then we're showing the DVD and having a couple of speeches. So... if people would like to come along, they can contact Peninsula Health Community Health on 9784 8100. That was 9784 8100. And then we're distributing it at the Midsummer Carnival.
Okay, so what's happening at Midsummer?
Turning Point and ourselves will have a tent at the Midsummer Carnival, and we'll be handing out copies of the DVD at the Midsummer Carnival.
Free copies?
Free copies, great. Yes. We've got 10,000 copies to give away.
Terrific. Great.
It sounds like a fabulous project, and it's, you know, very worthwhile to be thinking about these issues. And, you know, I'm sure that many of our listeners have had experiences with drugs themselves or with partners or family members who have and, you know, have suffered somewhat because of that. And I think it's something that we need to constantly, although, you know, there is the sense of, you know, party drug use within the community, I think we need to constantly be looking at the negative aspects of drug use and the positive aspects of what can be done when it gets out of hand. So, Simon, thank you for joining us on Saturday Magazine this morning. It's been great to talk about your work and the drug use issues
so
and the DVD.
So people can just turn up to that launch. Can they at ACME?
We're catering breakfast, so it'd be great if they could.
If you want to make sure you get fed. We've got the details for that here on switchboard, and so you just have to call us here on 1300 JOY 949. Note that new number. 1300 JOY 949, and we can give you all those details and anything else that we've discussed in the program today. And I just want to say to Lucas from Brisbane, who called in to say that despite what we may be thinking, he thinks we do a wonderful job and wants to let us know. That's awfully sweet. Thanks, Lucas.
Thank you, Lucas.
And thanks for listening in Brisbane.
And thank you to Simon Ruth, who's, I've forgotten the acronym, but there's the director
from Penda.
Complex.
This has been another JOY 94.9 podcast. JOY 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another JOY podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, JOY. Help keep JOY on air. Head to joy.org.au. JOY, a diverse sound for a diverse community.